from the Denkoroku, or the record of the transmission of the light, Keizon, Zenji. This is the Mount Shasta translation. The 31st ancestor, Master Daidoshin, bowing before great Master Kanchi, Doshin said, "Please, Reverend Priest, I beg you, from your compassion, to impart to me the Dharma Gate of Liberation." Kanchi said, "Who is preventing you from entering?" Doshin answered, "No one is preventing you." Kanchi said, "Then why do you seek liberation from me?" At these words, Doshin experienced a great awakening. In other words, why are you seeking liberation in the first place, since we're not bound, perhaps? This koan from the lineage is one that could bring you into a question of personal bindingness, what binds us, what binds you personally, collectively. I'll take you to another view of it that has become very personal, and that is it's about living, about the experience of living, about the experience of living vastly. It is not about the past or the future. It is, in a way, not about the present, yet we use that word because it brings us to look at being present to, with, in life, over and over and over again to the simultaneity that was, is, and will be all at once. Therefore, that's in a way about realizing there's no time involved in knowing. No time. No time in knowing. It is not an event happening in time. And again, we can thank our dear friend Master Dogen or T.S. Eliot, who speak to these things in their wonderful poetic way that reaches us in penetrating ways of awakening. This vastness, this limitlessness, this lack of binding, it's like an intersection of space and time. And where we sort of, like we intuitively sense, have a sense of infinity. And that includes right here and now. And when we open to that, intuitively call it, when we open to that vastness, we become one with it, or rather than become, is the recognition, the realization that not even the word one is needed. We become sensitive to qualities that dwell within us, amongst us, the Tao that permeates, for lack of a better word. It is about paying attention to that which is always with you and about you. Always. Infinitely. Now, in looking at this koan, you know, what is it that binds you and such, it's certainly very simple to look at conventional, psychological, emotional types of reasoning and such. And that you can do. But as I said, I'm not comfortable in looking at that as the call of the koan is perhaps more obvious than that. More obvious. That you can take your Dhammapada. You can work with the psychological. But there's something there still. Something there which is still that we have to come again and again and again. Now, some of the history of this dosha, my Muriel, my teacher, I guess, I don't know whether he cursed me with that or gifted me with that name 20 years ago, 25 years ago, someone has faith in the way. I don't know when I received the name that I had the same type of faith. As I glance up to this wonderful smile of a man, we laugh about how time and age are such gifts, that the smoothness of those things, the correctness of all those words and names start to be like breath, like air flowing in and out. Bodhi, Dushin was one of the six ancestors in China. That series that starts with Bodhidharma. I think we talked a little bit about it the other day. His teacher was Prajnatara, and I'm going to ask Dr. Day to hold back until later on today if I'm historically incorrect. But it suits the place. See, Buddhism was already in China in some form or another by the time that Bodhidharma got there. But in my little story, the way I would like to see it happen is that Bodhidharma, through Prajnatara, really took on the Mahayana. The Hinayana was sort of left aside. And when he came to China, he more or less was a marking point for Mahayana. And perhaps there was certainly meditation of sorts before that. There was meditation for tens of thousands of years. But apparently it was another part of the practice that was made more available. But more than that, from the Mahayana standpoint, so to speak, my understanding, my feeling, my response when Bodhidharma's name is put out there is that he looked at everything. There was nothing excluded. Everything was and is and will be the trans-historical Buddha. Trans-historical. This sense of wisdom, this limitlessness sense of a union that has never not been. I've played that double negative before, but really it's never not been. What is it for you? Never mind me. What is it for you? And I also like to think that this whole thing of Zen sort of started when Brahma gave the flower to the trans-historical Buddha. And from that moment, if you call it a moment, we don't know. Our beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance, these words that haunt us. From that point on, this sin, this transmission, just as it's happening, this very breath, this very thought. This sense of moksha, of limitlessness, carried through all the six ancestors, at that point until now. Even to Huinan, who I like to feel that could not find anything separate to wipe away. And that was the essence of the poem. I know there are other translations and other views, but there was that realization, that embodiment, that actualization, that there was nothing separate, that the subtle source we chanted this morning is clear and bright. And possibly, he had the realization that there might be a source other than as a word. Or, and this to me is I don't say critical or real, make it important, but it flows so naturally, but that this does not occur. This does not occur without me. This does not occur without you. So where could the source be? How vast might it be? I won't bother with too many poems today, but there's one poem that I want to read relative to that. But without you, what is there? Where is this source? Don't tell it to me. Take it for yourself. And why is it that a poem like this from Hafiz can sort of jump out of a book 15, 20 years ago, whatever, and you know what a pack rat I am, making notes and loving these things. Why is it? That Hafiz wrote, "One day the sun admitted, I am just a shadow. I wish I could show you the infinite incandescence that has cast my brilliant image. I wish I could show you when you are lonely or in darkness, the astonishing light of your own being. The astonishing light of your own being. Simply perceive the source." Simply. I love that word. And, Howard's not here, but he accused me of being pithy many years ago, and I thought it was a dirty word, but so I finally have found out that it's okay. But I want to address this issue of simplicity, pithiness, that there may be, for lack at this point for me, a better word than obvious to so many things, to it all, you know, ultimately, and not deep. Rest easy. Not deep. That this Muryo, you know what Muryo means? Means beyond boundaries, without boundaries. And I recall early on reading Ken Wilber's No Boundaries, things of that nature. You're trying to get something really important out of it. And now, what a relief. There's simplicity. That doesn't imply an halt to the knowing or activity in the world of every moment that is perfect, so to speak. But what are the things around us? And I started to say, gee, what can really be common to all of us that might make point of this simplicity? Become childlike for a moment. And you've all done some of these things in your time, and just look at it for yourself. But just remember the time when someone said to you, maybe you were a little child or older, said, "How much is one and one?" You said, "Two." "How much is two and two?" "Four." "How much is four and four?" "Eight." And then kept going in a hypnotic fashion until the words came out, "Where does it end?" Take that, admit to yourself. Recall that rug coming out from underneath, even though you were a little child, or you can have it as an adult, makes no difference. It's that obvious, this boundless. What about dividing the number one by three? Where does that chain of threes end? I'm not trying to be cute. I'm trying to maybe share that I'm not so smart. I like the simple. What's right there? What's been there all the time? And some other things. Pi. 3.1416 or whatever. That movie, The Power of 10. Remember that movie, The Power of 10? Or just the horizon. As you're out hiking or whatever, walking, that horizon. Always out there. Never not there. Always coming up. Limitlessly. And as I said, well, for me, there's an ongoing inquiry. We've talked about it before, and I'm not going to get into it here, but what is it that knows all this? And that kind of release that could be similar to, where does it end? Where does it end? Or the sky. just to look to the sky. There's a wonderful poem by Emily Dickinson, brief poem, that encompasses, let's see, this vastness in the way I'm saying. And for you brain students, mindfulness students, 100 years or more ago, she said, "The brain is wider than the sky. For put them side by side, the one the other will contain with ease, and you beside." Hafiz again. I'll read it once more. And don't worry, we'll give it to you later if you need it, but it's beautiful. The brain is wider than the sky. For put them side by side, the one the other will contain with ease, and you beside. Now, we can get to see the obviousness out of this, at least for me, that in this way, this vastness, that nothing is hidden. Nothing is hidden. And somehow we can rely on this vastness. It's just our life. Just look out the window. Just look out the window. How far can you see? We do this all the time, our life ongoing with that. The lesson is not hidden. It is right here. Never has been hidden. Vast, but perhaps not seen, so to speak. The poem, little poem line that years ago illumined that for me was just a couple of lines from T.S. Eliot. And he said, "Not known because not looked for, heard, half heard in the stillness between the two waves of the sea." Why do so many of our koans say, start with sometimes, "Look, look," Wittgenstein, "Don't think, look." This morning I was thinking, we chanted, "Vast is the robe of liberation," the first thing, one of the first things, been there in front of us all this time, vast. That in being this boundlessness, our true nature, or I didn't say our, the true nature, spontaneously expresses itself. Now, I've said this before. What if I never heard this? What if I never read the poems or read Murillo or Ken Wilber or whatever it may be? I was sitting with that. I love to sit with that. I just see what happens. What if I never heard of it? And then along the way, there are students of life that are well-respected. I think echo that in certain ways that I'm looking at now as falling into this category of obvious. The one I'm most frequently calling up for myself is William James. He said, "My experiences are what I agree to attend to." How obvious is that for you? How obvious? Rainer Maria Rilke, "Do I not choose myself all my destinies since eternity? Do I not choose myself all my destinies since eternity?" And William Siegel, whom we read this morning, Jishin, laid the climate for our city. "I'm saying that when the stand taken by the perceiver changes, the perceived also changes." Again, very obvious, in my estimation. So I have some inquiries about these things. And as these inquiries come up, as you know, we've talked before about, I think the responses arise simultaneously with the inquiries. Not an answer, but a response of all of us in that simultaneity sense. And these are personal, but like the flower, not private, somehow they're vastless and for all of us. So the first one, I sat down and started to write some of these down. I said, have I listened to the teachings and then tried to make my experiences fit them? Interesting. Take a look at that for yourselves. Or, after realization of this lack of binding, when that happens, is it really true that at this moment there is nothing I lack? Now, I know the old game I played for years and said, well, the moment is an instant of a thought, even looking for a thought, you know, you're off the bell, the mark. But at this moment, is there anything you lack? What also pops to mind is Byron Katie's four questions, to sit in that realm. Is this true? Is it really, really true? Work with that yourselves. Another inquiry that arises, without getting into any in-depth discussion of free will, destiny, or whatever you want, this is not the place, I'm not going to address that. But can I be a conscious servant to all this? Or am I going to remain an unconscious slave? Inquiry. A conscious servant or an unconscious slave. Whether on the cushion or not, can I ongoingly open the hand of thought, Jishin referred to this morning, to, so to speak, release those thoughts that abide nowhere, come from nowhere, and they go nowhere? Can I do that? Can I, as Maizumi described, once he was asked, what is the most advanced teaching? And in his so simply, obviously, human way, he said, be grateful and appreciative. Well, be grateful and appreciative of what? Of being here right now. That's all. Suzuki also mentioned this to you before. He said, the most important thing is to go lead a life that is good. Enjoy it. Just don't get fooled by things. What a beautiful little phrase. Just don't get fooled by things. That's for you to work with, your cushion in your lungs. My Zooming, it's another one that I just wanted to put it in here for some reason. It may not apply, but it seems that someone asked him once, who would you be given the choice? And he said, no one, no place. Boundless, endless, that's all. And with that, it's similar to St. Augustine when he talked about it's okay to read, study, be with things, but to not forget the there's a great book, The Very Appearance of Things. Just look above you, he said. Look below you. Note it. Read it. Buddha, God, never wrote that book with ink. Instead, they were set before your eyes. Can you ask for a louder word than that? Why, heaven and earth are shouting to you. That's my head. Just like this paper, or the rug, or the glance that we just had. Is there anything more than that? More than that. Another good inquiry is, when does this practice end? It's like Dogen talking about, when does this pure wind stop circling the earth? When does the horizon stop going further? And we don't, at least for myself, I don't have any sense of mastery. But I do have a sense, or there is a sense, of refinement. Maybe that's our aging there, that we're refining these things, that they become, we're refining time after time. Each time we're lost and then come back to our cushion with our breath, we're refining. We know the science of it today, but still, the good old-fashioned way of just having it simple, knowing what works in that way. One other thing that sort of a change of pace for me, I've, in the past, we've looked at the word freedom, and I very, you know, sharply would say, well, the moment you have any thought of what freedom is, you're not free anymore. You've already put a fence around it and such. And I understand that. That's a cute way. But over the last couple of weeks, thinking about what is it that binds me? What is it that binds us as a community in various ways, inwardly and outwardly? I looked, this word freedom came up in now, as I sit here, it's nothing more and nothing less than living life awake. I'll settle for that now. Just living it awake. All this mindfulness, freedom, liberation, vast is the robe of liberation. If we could see the, you know, it's like if we could see the miracle, the magic of a single flower, we could see all of this life so just instantly. And it's not freedom from anything, and it's not freedom to do anything. It's just accepting life as it is. Vast, changing, pulsing, not hidden, beyond words and phrases. And without losing our humanity. I've mentioned this before, Abraham Joshua Heschel, he says...
I was just thinking.
Good. That's not unusual here. Human being is boundless. Being human is respect for the boundaries. I don't need relative and absolute. I don't need those words. I'm not making small of them. But that's why sometimes I say I get a little tired of all those words. It isn't tired. There's respect there, but there's something else that is simple, more obvious perhaps than the struggle as to what they mean. Just that. Human being is boundless. Being human, respect for boundaries. Do with it what you want. The Siddhartha, paying attention to that which is always is always with you. In other words, when I ask you, what is it that knows it? What is it that knows there's no permanence? What is it? Feel it. This vastness, like Rumi with his love dogs, that just wants to be recognized. It knows it's been forgotten, and it wants to be recognized, and sends us everything to help us through there. So, I ask you to really, in reference to that which is always there, to become more and more sort of conscious of it. And it's that thought cannot touch or reach. And we sit, go there every day. Sit a while, just without easily, without stress or effort. And we'll have a half hour to try that again now. And learn there wordlessly. And then return to see thought in relation to that. Rest in that. And see everything in relation to that. Well, Daniel, when my issues occur, you know, I rest in that, and I'll say it, I rest in that which doesn't die. It doesn't die. And then what's left? Very simple, you all know it. Concern for others. Once you've rested yourself, your stuff, in that, the only thing left is to see this world as vast and wide? Is it a robe of liberation? So leading into this next part of this council and such that will happen, why do we practice together? Why do we want to? Do we need to? How do we do that and truly know that we are practicing together with everything, with boundlessness, limitlessness, moksha, freedom? I'll find out later on from Dan if this is accurate or not, but to me, I found that the Taoists may have felt that compassion, I get this from the joining together to give the Confucius people a swift kick, but it might not have been the compassion that we think of as the natural flow, but it was what we have here is a Sangha. And there's one more, and we've talked about it, we say, comradeship, the compassion of comradeship. Look around, it's here, so many familiar faces and things and memories. And the issue of service, and we'll talk, there'll be a little talk about that later. I came across something by Shirley Chisholm. It says, service is the rent we pay for the privilege of living on this earth. How simple and obvious. It is the very purpose of life and not something you do in your spare time. And that is ongoing. It is there. Or just, you know, I'll empty the dishwasher. Whatever. So, how am I doing on time, Jay? A few minutes? Oh, good. Then I'm going to just a couple of one thing that I left off that I just recalled. Thank you for your patience, my little supports of poetry of the great minds. But I wanted to read this before, and I'm listening in my note here. This is number 12 in the Tao Te Ching, the Guy Leakley translation. And it's interesting that, relative to seen and unseen, limitless, boundless, this is Guy's, and I like to call it not a translation, but a recreation. Seeing the shadow around each color, we honor the inner eye. Hearing the silence around each sound, we honor our inner ear. Feeling the sacred around each moment, we honor our inner heart. Freed from grasping in the material world, true seekers follow their inner light. Yeah. Freed from the bonds of delusion, their spirits soar. Freed from the bonds of delusions, their spirits soar. And what's interesting, Guy, those of you who have the book, he's put a kanji on that page. It's like a watermark on each page of those of you who have the book. And the one there he put on was Shin. The heart bursting, exploding. Vast. So, in a moment, we're going to chant the four vows. You all remember that. How many times did each one of you chant it? Now, relative to what we've been discussing, relative to doshin, feeling boundless, cast off the shackles. From this moment on, if there were any gift that were to be passed on, anything that I would want to, so to speak, transmit to the child, it would be for you to have a spark go off when you now hear the words numberless, inexhaustible, boundless, unsurpassable. Numberless, inexhaustible, boundless, unsurpassable. Get that? Not just to word it, not just to cast it aside and throw it out as we're sitting here doing it all. We know it feels good and we're having some connection. But there's more behind that. Maybe those vows now have a little more root in your heart, and I hope that is a gift for you.